Genesis 12 through 15. And that's a lot to cover because there's a lot of preaching in those chapters. Did you see anything in there of interest that you wanted to talk about or ask about this morning before we start? We earlier studied the creation, the fall, Noah, and now we come to Abraham. And the call of Abraham from Ur, which is modern-day Iraq. And it reminds us that, you know, God didn't just introduce himself to America. And God didn't just introduce himself in Jerusalem. God has been God always. And he introduced himself to the creation in the garden. And he's been familiar with people and in communion with people ever since then. And so while modern day we look at some countries as being unreached, right? We can get a map and you can go online and find your map and it'll show the unreached population. But the truth is when man got there, God was already there. And law was already there. Now whether they accepted that depends on where you look. But God was already in Iraq, and so Abraham was familiar with God, and he was a man of faith. And God said in verse 1, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, to a land that I will show thee. Now, why would God say that to Abram? Why would God say, you have to leave here, you have to leave your people, you even have to leave your family? Why would God say that? To get him out of corruption. Because those are the influences we have, aren't they? How many of you believe you've been influenced by your family? Right? And so they've influenced you one way or the other. Whether it was good, whether it was evil, you were influenced by your family. And even not just your parents, but your siblings. And even when we get married, how many of you get influenced by your spouse? Not much, right? You're the influencer. But the reality is we are around people and we rub off on them and they rub off on us. And God wanted to start over. He wanted to start something fresh, something new. And he didn't want to flood the earth. He'd already done that. He didn't want to destroy the earth. He wanted to take one righteous man of faith and say, I'll start with you. And that's what we're reading here. How old was Abraham? 75. 75 years old. So some of you think that you're, you know, too old to start over. God looked at Abram and said, I'm going to start over with you. Now, I know if you are around the age of 75, you don't want kids, do you? And you certainly don't want to be pregnant. Amen. So I comprehend that. I understand you. But when God was taking Abram, he was starting a whole new thing. There were people where God would send Abraham. But God said, Abraham, this is your land. He said, walk any way you want to. It's all yours. And that was the promise that God made to him. Look at what he says in verse number 2. I will make of thee a great nation. I will bless thee, make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And that is so important for us that we want to be a blessing, that we want to help others, that we want to serve others, that we want to encourage others. That's what God told Abraham he would do. He would be a blessing. Verse 3, and I will bless them that bless thee. And I will curse him that curseth thee. How many of you ever heard the phrase, you've messed with the wrong person? God said anybody messes with Abraham is going to be on God's list. You don't want to mess with Abraham, that's the friend of God. And of thee, in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Now, of course, we're talking about the seed of Abraham becoming the Jews, the Hebrews. Jesus, and through Jesus, all nations of the earth being blessed. And so that was the specific prophecy there. In verse 4, it says he was 75 years old. Now, Abraham goes. He goes through Canaan. Bible tells us that he, in verse number 8, settles on a place called Bethel, east of Bethel. He pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. He just kept going further and further and further south. Verse 10, there was a famine in the land. So where did Abram go? He went all the way to Egypt. And it came to pass, verse 11, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai, his wife, "Behold, now I know thou art a fair woman to look upon." Is that what it says in your Valentine's card? Thou art a fair woman to look upon. It shall come to pass, verse 12, when the Egyptians see thee, they shall say, "This is his wife," and they'll kill me, but they will save thee alive. So what's the dominant feature here in that verse? In that verse, what is the dominant characteristic? What? Okay, she's beautiful. Okay, so what? Fear. Fear. So what does his fear cause him to do? Tell a half-truth. The truth is, she is his half-sister. But she's also his wife. So he goes with that one because he's scared. There's an Amber Alert. Everybody's phone going off. That's okay. Everybody that's watching online, their phone's going off too. So fear is driving his decision making. Somebody didn't catch their silent there. I'd get a new system. Your phone's behind. So fear is causing him to be dishonest. And not only is it causing him to be dishonest, but who is he putting in jeopardy? So he's putting her in jeopardy to save his own skin. He's not thinking about her, and he should be putting her first. And you know what you can do? Anybody got any ideas? Turn around, go back north. Don't put yourself in that situation. But he's running from what? Famine. So see how all of this is working? And he's leaving, and he's going. And they get there, and guess what? So they say, "Hey, King, there's this pretty woman in here." And so what do you think he did? Well, invite her over. And they brought her into the house. And you know what? People in that house started getting sick. Look at what it says in verse number. Look at verse 15. The princes of Pharaoh saw her, commended her before Pharaoh. The woman was taken in Pharaoh's house. He entreated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, animals, men servants, maid servants, and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife. So Abraham's fear for his own protection put her in jeopardy and hurt a whole bunch of people all around him, all because he was scared and decided to be dishonest. She would have been 65. So I think that's right. There you go. See? We should look into it. It's that Dead Sea salt. If you go over there, get that mud on you. Sister Lana, those of you watching online, say, what kind of treatment does she have? She is beautiful at 65. Right, yeah. Well, you know, their diet was way different. You know, their diet was way different and their lifestyle was way different. By the way, I know lots of beautiful 65-year-olds. But I get your point. So Abraham put everybody else in jeopardy because of his fear. It's telling. And so Pharaoh is starting to have plagues in his home, and guess what he does? He says, when did this start? This wasn't like this before they got here. Since they got here, we've been sick. And they said, you got to go. And they figured it out that she was his wife and confronted him and told him to leave. So in chapter 13, look at verse 1. Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. He went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning. Now, Brother Rodney said he shouldn't have gone there. There you go. It's just that simple. Remember, you know, when we study the book of Ruth, what do you remember about the book of Ruth? Okay, they should have stayed where they were at. Boaz stayed. They left, came back, and Boaz was doing just fine. Boaz stayed. But the problem is what? The grass is always greener on the other side. And so they went where the grass was greener. And no doubt it was the part of the Jordan Valley, and beautiful and lush. But when they got back, they found out that they should have just stayed where they were. Guys, we just get up and run too easily, too quickly. Anyway, he went on his journeys from there to Bethel, verse 4, to the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. Again, same place. Verse 5, we see that their substance was great. He and Lot also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great. They were very wealthy, very successful, but they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdmen. Verse 8, Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou take the left, I'll go to the right. If thou depart to the right, I'll go to the left. Pretty simple, right? Abram just wanted resolution. He didn't want to fight. He said, there's enough room for both of us. Why are we living on top of each other? So Lot lifted up his eyes. What would have been great if Lot went to the altar and prayed? If Lot went alone to the mountaintop and prayed, but he didn't do that. He trusted his eyes. What got Eve in trouble? You say, well, it was that serpent. No, she saw that the fruit was pleasant to look upon. It was beautiful to look upon. Her eyes got her in trouble. And we got to be careful what we let our eyes lead us to. Because what may look harmless may in fact be very harmful. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan. It was well watered everywhere. And this was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. And Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain. And there is that famous phrase, right? Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. Now what happened? His eyes got him in trouble. He looked and he was entertained by it. Pitched his tent, watched them. He said, well, I would never do that, but I'll just watch. I'll just see what they're doing down there. I'll just kind of mind them. And he got intrigued, and he got involved, he got entangled. Just the first step was what? He just looked at it. He just saw it. He just watched it. He pitched his tent toward Sodom. The men of Sodom were wicked, verse 13, wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot was separated from him, lift up thine eyes now and look from the place where thou art, northward, southward, eastward, westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. I'll make thy seed as the dust of the earth. If a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. And that was God's promise. And Abram moved his tent again, built another altar to the Lord. Chapter 14, we find that there was a king that was conquering. And in his conquering, he came to the land of Sodom, where Lot had pitched his tent. Verse 12, they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. So they've taken everything. Lot was set for life. He decided he was just going to enjoy the living of Sodom and Gomorrah. But now he's been taken prisoner, and all of his stuff was taken too. And a servant went and told Abraham and said, Lot's been captured. He's been taken as a prisoner of war. Verse 14, Abram heard that. His brother was taken captive. He armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them to Dan. How many of you remember where Dan is? When we talk about Israel, we talk about the land from Dan to Beersheba. So remember, Abraham, he traveled northward, but Sodom and Gomorrah is at the Dead Sea. So they're all the way at the southern end of Israel. And now they've taken them, gone all the way to the north end of Israel. In fact, when they're discovered, when they're caught, you see they're near Damascus. That's in Syria, the northern end of Israel, and over beyond Galilee. So it's a long way. But the Bible says that Abraham armed his servants and got some stuff together and his people together. Verse 15 tells us, left of Damascus. Verse 16, he brought back all the goods and brought again his brother Lot and his goods and the women and the people. They brought everything back. Abraham successfully recaptured all that Lot had, all of Lot's people. And then they're traveling back, long journey, from the northern end of Israel to the southern end of Israel. All, again, just think of this, along the Jordan River. You know, that's one of the ways they would travel. And on the way, they came across a king. Verse 18, Melchizedek, the king of Salem. Now, who knows where that is? Jerusalem, Salem, Shalom, peace. So they've come across the king of Salem, Melchizedek. Look at what it says. He brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. Well, hold on a second. You see, we're following the story of Abram, but that's not the only place God is doing something. You got Melchizedek in Jerusalem, king of Salem. He's a priest and a king, of whose origins we're not familiar. But his offerings are what? Wine and so offerings of the temple, bread and wine. How do we observe communion? Bread and wine. Now, we'll define wine for me. When you squeeze a grape, the juice that comes out, that's wine. So that's how we observe communion. So this representation of Christ all the way in the Old Testament with Abraham. And what does Abraham do for Christ? Well, number one, he blessed him and said, blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. So the priest, the king, this figure of Jesus, or like Jesus, the King of Peace, blesses Abraham. And then he gave him, Abraham gives him tithes of all. So he gives 10% of all that they've captured, he gives to Melchizedek, a tithe. Now, understand, a tithe, a tenth, an offering, has not been instituted. This is the first time. This is the first point it's actually mentioned. Somebody asked me not long ago, but what are we supposed to give? And I said, well, a tithe is what's prescribed. We as a church don't go, you know, checking people's bank accounts or check stubs or whatever. That's not our business. Your tithe is between you and the Lord. It's none of my business or anybody in this church. It's none of our business if you tithe. It's between you and God. And when Abraham gave his tithe to Melchizedek, it was just between him and the Lord, him and Melchizedek also. So that you'll see in the New Testament, Melchizedek, and this is the reference, the king and priest of Jerusalem or of Salem, of peace. And that's where you find it. And the king of Sodom said to Abraham, give me the persons and take the goods to thyself. Now, Abram's left his, he's gotten his army, the 318 people out of his own house, his trained servants. He's fed them. They've traveled all the way to the northern end of Israel, to Syria, recaptured Lot and all the people and all the stuff and brought it back. And when they get back, the king says, just give us the people and you keep what you've taken. All the money, all the goods. And what does Abraham say? Verse 22, he said to the king of Sodom, I lift up my hand to the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take a thread, from a thread even to a shoe latchet, that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abraham rich. He said, yeah, I'm not going to have you saying you made me who I am. That's quite a statement. Why? Because in his faith, he looked at what was going on at Sodom, and he looked at that king of Sodom as being the leader of that place, and he said, I don't want to be associated with that. I'll not have people saying that you made me who I am. I'll not have you having any kind of influence or saying you have any influence over who I am and what I do. It's important. The people that have influence in our lives. Lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich. All right, chapter 15. Now, chapter 15, to me, is just an incredible, this image, you have to imagine it. We have to put ourselves there to really see what's going on. Because when we read through this stuff, like we just read, Abram's just traveled from the southern end of Israel all the way to the northern end and back, and we went through it in like 5 minutes. And that's how we read the Bible. We really have to settle down. When you study the Bible at home, really just take those parts and just really work your way through it. Think your way, envision it, imagine it. Let God speak to you through it. Chapter 15 is one that's so important. The Bible says in verse 2, Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house, this Eleazar of Damascus? So, you know, Abraham served God, but he's starting to feel the end of his life. And by the way, it's important for us to really reflect and think, you know, forward. How many of you know where you're going to be buried if you're going to be buried? Okay. Got to make those plans. Why? Because at some point, it's got to be done. And I know we don't like to talk about it. But at this point, Abraham is thinking about it, and he says, you know, God, I'm over 75 years old, and I got no children. I've served you, I've walked with you, I've obeyed you, but I have no children. The closest one in my home is Eleazar, and he's from Damascus. He's not even my people. He's a servant. Verse 3, Abram said, behold, to me thou hast given no seed. And lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. So he's already said what? Of the dust of the earth, and now he says of the stars of the sky. He said, if you can number them, you'll know what an impact you're going to have on the world. Think about that. How big is our impact? How big is our influence? I mean, the people we've actually touched. How many people that we have influenced will we see in heaven? How many people will be in heaven because we influenced them? Because we shared the gospel, because we encouraged them to seek God. How many people are going to be in heaven? I mean, can you count them on one hand or two? God said Abraham's influence is going to be the dust of the earth, the stars of the sky. We have to determine at what point we're going to get serious about having an influence on those around us and really make a difference. And you can. You say, well, I'm too old. Well, Abraham was over 75, so I mean, he was still going strong at 100. Is anybody in here 100? No. You say, well, it was different back then. Well, the main difference was Abraham was having an influence. And that's what we're talking about. He believed, look at verse number 6. He believed in the Lord and he counted it to him for righteousness. He said unto him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of Ur of the Chaldees to give thee this land to inherit it. God says, Abram, I've given you all this stuff and you've come up with something that I haven't given you. How many of you know somebody like that? You could give them everything. They're going to come up with one thing you haven't given them. They're going to think of that one thing you overlooked. And we look at Abraham and we love, you know, Abraham, we love him and we regard him highly. And yet, we see the human nature here. We see that he's just like the people that we know and just like we are sometimes. Of all that we have in life, we look at that one thing we don't have. And you say, but Pastor, he didn't have any children. That's kind of important. But look at all he did have. And understand something. God already had a plan before Abraham brought that up. That's the part we miss. We miss the idea that God already had this figured out before Abraham figured it out. Verse 8, and he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? He said unto him, take me a heifer of 3 years old, a she-goat of 3 years old, a ram of 3 years old, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took them all these and divided them in the midst and laid each piece one against another, but the birds divided he not. Okay. How long does it take you to field dress a heifer, a goat, a ram? How long does that take? A while. All right, so imagine this. If you've not done it, that's okay, but you understand what we're talking about is he's cutting them open, he's separating them, he's butchering them, if you will. And that's not done. That doesn't happen just like that. It takes time and a good sharp knife. And he's dividing them. God says, do this. He did it. Divide them in the midst, lay one piece against another. But the birds he didn't divide. Verse 11, what happens? The fowls came down upon the carcasses. How many of you ever been cleaning a deer or goat or whatever it is that you've harvested or alligator or fish or whatever? And the flies or the birds, I mean, if you try to clean a fish at the landing up there, you'll probably have seagulls coming in there, right? Anybody ever fight seagulls when you're cleaning your fish? Any of that? And so maybe the bees or the wasps, these are buzzards. So it's a long period of time. These buzzards start coming down. He's trying to serve God. He's got buzzards coming in. Let me tell you something. When you're trying to serve God, sometimes you're going to have to fight the buzzards that are there to steal your blessing. How many of you have ever dealt with that? There will be buzzards trying to steal your blessing. And you've got to fight them off. And Abraham's driving them away, trying to serve God. And the buzzards come in. He's trying to push them away, trying to clean the ox and the ram. And verse 12, when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and a horror of great darkness fell upon him. You ever just have an emotion come over you, and you really don't know where it came from? How many of you can relate to what he's saying here? A horror of great darkness. All of a sudden, he's praying. He says, God, you know what? I don't have any children. God says, you go down here and you lay this offering out. And so he lays out the offering. Lays them out, sets them apart, lays the birds, fights off the buzzards. He's weary, falls asleep, and he's just got this fear this fear. What's he afraid of? Coyotes? Lions? More buzzards? What's he afraid of? Sometimes we're just afraid and we don't know why. Sometimes the horror just grips us and we don't understand it. And that's what happened to Abraham. And if you've ever been there, and I won't ask you to raise your hand, but if you've ever related to that, then you know that God sees that. And he shows us that even Abraham had that sense. Verse 13, God said to Abram, "Know of a surety, thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them and afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance." So God is giving Abram the understanding that in just a few years, all of his people are going to end up in Egypt. And they're going to be there 400 years. But when they come out, they're going to come out a very rich people. And God's telling Abraham that. Verse 15, "And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace and be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall come here again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And it came to pass that when the sun went down, it was dark. Behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces." So here's the vision. Here's the vision. What is that essence? What is that vision? Passing between the pieces of the offering. Visualize it. Imagine it. What is it? Okay, it's God. What does God look like? Fire and smoke. The cloud, the radiant cloud. We see it throughout the scriptures. The fire and the cloud. When we go into the temple, the tabernacle as they're traveling, right? The cloud by day, fire by night. We in the temple, in the tabernacle, the fire and the cloud, the essence of God. And Abraham, as he's there and it gets dark, God walks between. He accepts the offering. He accepts the sacrifice. He walks between those pieces. And God made a covenant, verse 18, saying, "Unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates." Now, is that the boundaries of Israel today? No. Get you a map and look where the Euphrates is. All the way to Egypt. And that's the land of Syria. And the land of Israel. And the land of Jordan. You see? All of that. God said, "I'm giving it to you." So right now, Israel is compressed on a very small portion of that. But God has made a covenant with Abram that all of that is the land of Abraham. Comments, questions? See, normally we have plenty of time. It's a great point, and I will look at that. Did Lot ever pray? Because to my knowledge, the only time he ever talked to the Lord was when the angels were pulling him out of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's a great question, but he's not recognized as having faith. He's just along for the ride. And unfortunately, for those that do have faith, there are people who will tag on to your coattails, but never embrace the faith you have. They'll enjoy the crumbs that fall from the table, but they never embrace that faith for themselves. Great point. Any others? Let's take a break.